I've realized that a lot of you get frustrated by the videos I make. So in my videos, I talk about different problems in today's society. There are two problems I keep coming back to. One, that the way we work today is absurd. And two, that inequality is reaching insane levels. And a lot of you are telling me in the comments that sure, these are two important problems, but why aren't you talking about any solutions? And I have to admit, that criticism is fair. So for this video, I traveled from Stockholm to Gothenburg to meet author and filmmaker Patrick Witkowski, who believes that there is a real solution that could not only make work less miserable, but also reduce inequality and solve democracy.
I mean, we usually talk about having a job. We're born, we go to school, and we get hair under our arms, and then we get a job. What is getting a job? Getting a job is basically that you as an individual, you agree to rent yourself to a company where there's a board and top managers that is unaccountable to you. You don't get to decide who should be your boss, so to speak. You know, we have this idea of political democracy. We take that for granted that we can vote our, you know, who we want to have as our political leaders, but then on the other hand, most of us go and spend our daily lives working in institutions where there is no democracy.
Not only is work today undemocratic, it's also increasingly totalitarian and dystopian. Many large corporations, including Amazon and Walmart, the two largest US employers, are using ever more oppressive technologies like AI-powered cameras to monitor its workers' every move.
So it's really like, you know, a Black Mirror kind of episode when you hear of some of these techniques that are being implemented in some workplaces. So it's really like a totalitarian development that is taking place in society, but we don't talk about it as a totalitarian development because it's in the so-called private sphere.
I've talked a lot in my videos about how broken things are, and in this one, I will do that too. I will explain how the way we organize work leads to a number of bad outcomes, but I will also talk about something else. That maybe work hasn't always been this bad, and maybe we can fix it. For most of human history, most people have worked for themselves, as hunters, farmers, craftsmen, merchants. And while systems of slavery and coercion, of course, have always existed, for those who were free, autonomy was often central to work. Then, 200 years ago, the Industrial Revolution changed everything. On a mass scale, people went from working for themselves to working for the man. As this shift was unfolding, many viewed it with deep suspicion and even horror.
So going back to like the early 1800s, you have, for example, Alexis de Tocqueville, who is today, you know, someone who is revered by both people from the left and from the right.
In the 1830s, Tocqueville traveled across the United States and carefully documented what he saw in the book Democracy in America.
And he's very impressed by a lot of things, you know, the lively town meetings in New England, and it's kind of like a very agrarian system where a lot of people work for themselves. He likes the whole Republican idea that you don't have, you know, a monarchy. But then he says, you know, there's one thing that's bothering me, and that's these big manufacturing aristocracies, as you talk about.
The manufacturing aristocracy, which is growing up under our eyes, is one of the harshest which ever existed in the world. If ever a permanent inequality of conditions and aristocracy again penetrate into the world, it may be predicted that this is the channel by which they will enter.
Suddenly you have one employer who is becoming the administrator of a vast empire, and under him you have a lot of people who are just becoming dependent on him, subordinate to him. So you again start to see a society with the rulers who give orders and the people who obey. They don't think for themselves, they just spend their lives taking orders. Well, what is this if not aristocracy?
Tocqueville was far from the only critic of this new type of aristocracy. Thinkers as diverse as the German scientist and philosopher William von Humboldt, the economist Karl Marx, The liberal political thinker John Stuart Mill and the philosopher Bertrand Russell were all deeply critical of the mass subordination of people as wage earners. And today, contemporary philosophers like David Ellerman make a strong case that there are uncomfortable similarities between slaves and employees.
What we have today is a system where workers are rented instead of purchased. If you had a voluntary slavery system as a hypothetical system, they would be selling all their labor once for their whole lifetime. That was very inconvenient for the masters because then you had to support the slaves during good times and bad. Whereas if you just rent them, then you, in bad times, you can just lay them off and then hire them back in good times. And that's the system we have today, is where you have the employer-employee contracts.
The truly remarkable thing, though, is that despite all of the criticism, and despite the extraordinary changes the world has seen since the Industrial Revolution, the aristocratic or the non-democratic model of work still dominates today.
Yeah, so the system remains the same. You know, there's no real difference if you're a sawmill worker in the 1850s or if you work at a bank, in 2025. The employment contract reigns supreme. You know, you still rent yourself to an employer and agrees to subordinate yourself to a board of directors that you cannot elect in return for a wage. So that system remains, and what has happened is that it's spread all over the world. There's this meme that I saw that I think was pretty funny, where the boss came with this nice new sports car the other day to work, and then the employee says, "Hey boss, that's a great new sports car." And the boss says, "Well, if you really put an effort and you do all your hours next year and really dedicate yourself to this work, then I might buy an even bigger one next year." There seems to be something that's just wrong with the way that work is organized today. I would like to highlight four key problems with the system. So one is, of course, job satisfaction. We know today from a lot of research that one of the key contributors to, you know, stress and burnout is that people don't feel like they have any control or able to impact their daily work.
According to this research, work that combines high demands with little control or influence for the employee can cause fatigue, stress, depression, anxiety, insomnia, cardiovascular disease, and back pain.
Gallup does these international polls where they ask people, how engaged are you at work? And in the latest poll that I saw, it was 77% of the global workforce that said that they were not engaged at work. And about a quarter of them actually said that they're actively disengaged at work.
And this matters a lot because studies also indicate that how much we enjoy our work is hugely important for our overall happiness. One study claims that the quality of work is the second most important factor for our overall sense of well-being. The only thing that affects our well-being more is mental illness.
So the second problem is democracy. And this goes back to John Stuart Mill, you know, the father of modern liberalism. He said that, you know, you don't learn how to swim or read or write or anything by just watching someone else do it. You need to practice it.
The mental and moral, like the muscular powers, are improved only by being used.
You can't have a well-functioning political democracy without people practicing it in their daily lives. You know, they should practice it in their local community, but also, of course, where they spend most of their waking hours in the workplace. The opposite is, of course, true as well. So in a lot of workplaces, the managers can basically tell you, you know, what you can and cannot say at work, but also even outside of work. They can tell you, you know, of course, what you should wear, when you can eat, when you can take your toilet breaks. So what do you think will happen if you have these institutions where people spend their whole lives just taking orders? Of course, that's going to impact how people see themselves. And then, of course, you'll have other people who will see it as natural that they should rule and give orders. So the third problem is inequality. So again, you have the system of some people who are renting themselves, the workers, and then you have some people who own the companies, the owners. And the workers, they get wages, and the owners, they get the profits.
And while the wages that go to the employees have stagnated, the profits that go to the small group of owners are at an all-time high. This division has contributed to the extreme wealth inequalities that I have talked about in a number of previous videos. But the aristocratic organization of work also leads to inequality in another way.
Since the owners of these companies are often themselves quite wealthy, they don't care that much if the board and the top managers give themselves bonuses and paychecks that sometimes, you know, can be bigger in a year than what the average worker makes in a lifetime.
In 1965, the average Fortune 500 CEO was paid 21 times as much as a typical worker. In 2022, the CEO was paid 344 times as much.
And the fourth problem is inefficiency.
The inefficiency problem is, just like the inequality problem, based on the fact that there is a division between, on the one hand, people who work in the company for a wage, and on the other hand, the owners of the company who take the profits.
The owners, they want the workers to work as much as possible for as little as possible, and the workers want to work as little as possible for as much as possible. How do you deal with this? Throughout history, you've had all these kinds of Taylorism, where you break down the work process into small details and try to destroy all autonomy and just keep control of everyone. Today, we have the rise of a whole huge consultancy industry that is trying to make people feel as if they are owners and they should identify with the company. But you have this basic problem that you have some people who are just not owning the place. And why should they care about the long-term development of someone else's company? And it's interesting because there's this whole economics literature that is all about theorizing how managers need to have shares in the company in order to feel dedication and care about the company and have the right incentives and so on. But very few have questioned, well, why doesn't that go for the whole workforce? Why shouldn't the people on the shop floor also be an owner?
In the beginning of the 20th century, the inefficiency problem of modern companies got worse as stock exchanges became a dominant force in our economies.
So then, instead of having, you know, one owner who knows everything about the company, maybe walks around there, is, you know, personally very invested in it, suddenly you have huge numbers of people who are owning the company. So this leads to another big problem, namely, who is monitoring the board and the top managers? Who are, you know, who are doing the supervising? The employees cannot do it because they're disenfranchised, they have no voting rights. And the shareholders, they don't know what's going on in the company.
Economists refer to this as the principal agent problem. And during the last few decades, as a new type of owner has entered the markets, this problem has gotten even worse.
With the rise of index funds that you have today, so you have a few really big passive asset managers like BlackRock, State Street and Vanguard, which is called the Big Three. Their whole business model is that they don't care at all about what's going on in the companies that they own.
So the non-democratic model of work that dominates today, it makes people miserable, it undermines democracy, it creates inequality, and it's hugely inefficient. But what if there were an alternative, one that addressed all of these issues at once?
I can't help but believe that in the future, we'll see in the United States and throughout the Western world an increasing trend toward the next logical step, employee ownership. It's a path that benefits a free people.
So there is, of course, an alternative which not so many people may have heard about, but it's that instead of companies being owned and run by owners, they're owned and run by the people working in the firms. So these are sometimes referred to as democratic companies or employee-owned companies. This is, of course, not a new idea. There are definitely figures from both the left and the right who've been very much in favor of this. Interesting example is Ronald Reagan, you know, who is hardly a well-known Marxist, but you also have the kind of Bernie Sanders, democratic socialists, who is very much in favor of employee-owned companies.
So when we talk about democracy, it's not only, you know, the right to vote every 4 years. It really has to do with what goes on 24 hours a day. Democracy means having some control over your life when you work. And that's what employee ownership means to me.
Even a hyper-capitalist like the private equity firm KKR partner Pete Stavros is an outspoken proponent of employee ownership.
this is the right thing to do that also happens to be good business. Ownership is really an ethos. It's a mindset. This is an unbelievably popular idea with liberal progressives and MAGA Republicans and everything in between.
So if we go back to these four problems that we talked about, let's talk about the first two, satisfaction and democracy. And there is quite a lot of research now that backs up the intuitions that a lot of the Enlightenment thinkers had, that if people feel like they can participate in work and have more say, then they tend to feel more satisfaction at work, and they tend also to be more active outside of work, you know, maybe in civil society. So if we take the third problem with inequality, the question is, what do you do with it? And of course, there is one common solution, which is redistribution. So that's one solution. But of course, there are other solutions which are sometimes referred to as pre-distribution. So pre-distribution is about creating a system where wealth is distributed much more equally from the get-go. So by having companies that are owned by the workers, capital immediately is distributed much more equally than if it's outside shareholders.
In democratic companies, the salary gap is also narrower. For example, in Mondragon, one of the world's largest democratic companies, the CEO is paid 6 times the average worker salary.
So coming back to the fourth problem with efficiency. There are a lot of people who've thought that employee-owned companies, they cannot work. Monkeys cannot run the zoo, as a banker once said. And there's a lot of economists who've theorized, you know, these companies will underinvest, people will, you know, slack and free ride, and we don't have to theorize so much about it, because now we have a lot of empirical research that have compared companies that are owned by the employees with companies that are not. And what these studies now show is that they tend to outperform.
The employee-owned companies are more productive, they have lower employee turnover, their employees are more likely to suggest improvements, and they are more innovative.
To me, the reason why employee ownership is so relevant today is that it is a source of stability in an increasingly unstable world. So not only has it been proven time and time again to improve company resilience, but it is also a very effective way of anchoring jobs, wealth, and ownership in local communities. And this is especially important in a globalized economy, where companies can easily relocate across borders overnight, and absentee owners can extract profits without ever setting foot in the business. So employee ownership prevents these extractive practices.
At this point, you might be thinking, if this is all true, that democratic companies make people less miserable, it strengthens democracy, it leads to less inequality and even superior performance, then why do non-democratic companies still dominate in our economy?
You know, in Voltaire's Candide, a famous novel, there is this character called Dr. Pangloss, and they go around the world and they see all these miseries and all these things that are bad. But whatever happens, Dr. Pangloss, he just says, well, you know, we live in the best of all worlds. You know, God created it this way, so everything that happens is just the best possible outcome.
All that is for the best. If there is a volcano at Lisbon, it cannot be elsewhere. It is impossible that things should be other than they are, for everything is right.
And sometimes I hear people having kind of a similar reasoning about the current state of the economy. We're living in the best of all possible worlds because, you know, it's created by the market or whatever. But what if the market doesn't lead, you know, to the optimal outcome? In fact, you know, there is, as I've mentioned, there is a lot of empirical research that shows that a lot of democratic companies are more efficient than conventionally owned competitors.
Surveys also show that this is what people want. 72% of Americans would rather work for an employee-owned company than one owned by external owners or the state.
So the question that you should be asking yourself is more, well, then what is the problem with the market as it's structured today?
There are many such problems that make the market biased towards aristocratic, non-democratic companies. These problems include wealth inequality, path dependency, lack of supportive legislation and institutions, resistance from unions, and the concentrated nature of our economy. But there is one even bigger problem.
The biggest problem, perhaps, is just the lack of knowledge. The most common question I get when I'm out talking about these things is like, I didn't even know those companies existed. And in fact, there already are, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of these companies around. The biggest and most famous is probably the Mondragon Corporation in the Basque region of Spain. It's a network of more than 90 different democratic companies employing more than 70,000 workers. One third of all cars globally use components made at Mondragon. One half of all trains are built using Mondragon machines, and 90% of all airplanes are using their technology solutions.
La empresa es nuestra, pero somos trabajadores también, ¿no? Entonces, no hay como un jefe que pueda haber en otras empresas, ¿no? Todos somos nuestros jefes y todos tenemos que tirar para adelante con la empresa.
Es el futuro tenemos del mundo laboral también.
In countries like Sweden and much of the world, employee ownership is still very rare, but there are signs that this is beginning to change. In the United States, a standardized model, the Employee Stock Ownership Plan, ESOP, has existed since the 1970s. This allows workers to gradually buy out the company when an owner wants to exit. And today, ESOP companies employ 15 million people in the US, which is 10% of the private workforce. Proponents of the ESOP model see it as a game changer for employee ownership in our economy.
I think that ESOPs are a game changer because they allow workers to become owners of their companies without requiring them to invest their personal savings or put their assets at risk. ESOPs are essentially a leverage buyout, meaning that the company's available cash flow is used to repay the acquisition debt. And this solves the financing problems that workers often face when they are considering buying their companies.
And in the UK, a similar model was implemented 10 years ago, and already there are 2,000 ESOP companies in the UK employing 250,000 workers. And last year, an ESOP model was endorsed by the Government of Canada, and a new, improved European ESOP model has also been developed and implemented as a pilot in Slovenia, where it's expected to be implemented into law in 2025. Only 18% of the global population today believes that the current economic system works for them. And as the philosopher Slavoj Žižek and others have pointed out, it's often easier to imagine the end of the world than it is to imagine the end of capitalism. Despite signs of progress, most of us still spend our lives in non-democratic companies, where we take orders from a small group of people who reap the profits of our labor. And this system is designed to make us feel powerless, but we are not powerless. Change is possible, but change doesn't just happen. As Patrick reminds us in his book, whoever wants change can start by being the change today. So if you run a company, you can make it democratic. And if you work for a non-democratic company, you can already today start treating all of your colleagues as equals. Because the question isn't whether democratic companies can work. We know that they do. The question isn't whether a better world is possible, because we know that it is. The question is, what behaviors are each of us willing to change today to make it happen? My name is Anders Asvero, and this is The Market Exits. This video essay that you have just watched, thank you for watching it, by the way. It took a really long time to make, and it was a lot of work, but I absolutely loved making it, and I want to make more ambitious video projects like this. But for me to be able to keep doing that, I am going to need your support. And the simplest way to support me is to like this video, to subscribe to my channel, and to share this video with your friends and colleagues. But if you really want me to keep doing this work, I invite you to become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/themarketexits. To my existing patrons, thank you very, very much. And it was actually one of my patrons who first suggested to me that I make a video essay about employee ownership and economic democracy, Costa Yuri, who also appears in this video. Thank you, Costa. Thank you also to my dear friend and staunch supporter, Nils, for operating the camera for the walk and talks in this video and for carrying around the old tube TV that you see in the video. I will let Patrick conclude this video essay with a few words about his book. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so I've been working with the whole, you know, question of economic democracy in employee-owned companies for more than 10 years. So based on my experiences, you know, and talking with people about it, I thought I'd sit down and just, you know, write a book that's easy to read, a good introduction. So the book is called We Can Govern Ourselves, a book about economic democracy. Right now it's only in Swedish, but if you're an English speaker, you can watch my documentary called Can We Do It Ourselves, which is on YouTube, freely available.